Welcome to the Write Your Own Story podcast. I'm your host, Betsy Leonidas, and the founder of the Write Your Own Story Company. Girl, I can tell you right now, you are definitely enough. Here we value service, sisterhood, connection, laughter, and that super genuine, keep it real, tell you like it is honesty. My hope is at the end of each episode, you realize you can do whatever it is you dream about and that you are not alone with what you struggle with. I'm hoping that you are snapping and clapping and hell yes in your way through each one of these episodes. So if this tracks with you, let's get started. I'm so glad you're here. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Write Your Own Story podcast. I am your host, Betsy Leonidas, and I am here with a great friend, Meriden from Meriden Mental Fitness. Meriden, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
We have known each other for a while, like multiple years, like pre-kids for you. One, maybe two kids for me. I don't know. I've been at this game a little longer. But we met at like all sorts of fun, like Cincy fitness events. And then Lauren Silcott, shout out.
Hi, Lauren.
is like a common connector between the two of us. She's so great.
I know. She's awesome. Yes.
I love it. But before we get into all the fun stuff, I like to start out every episode with an intention. You obviously are all around mental well-being. We're going to get into your insane bio, as we were just talking before we started recording. I'm like, I'm falling more and more in love with you. I'm like, you're so impressive.
Oh my gosh.
But like, I've talked about mental well-being and mindfulness on the show before because I think it's so important. And I think I like having different perspectives because sometimes you just have to listen to different perspectives until something clicks for you. Because I think I always hope with this show that people can feel less alone or find something that is helpful. And sometimes, you know, you just have to find the thing that clicks for you. And what I'm so excited about for our discussion today is we are going to like really geek out on data.
Yes, which we are.
Literally makes my heart sore. I love data. I love it as it relates to work, but also as it relates to life. Like Brené Brown is like one of my all-time favorite people to study because I think the way that she approaches her work is so data-driven, and I just love that perspective. Yes. So you're my Brené Brown.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I'm speechless. I've never been compared to Brené Brown before.
Here it is,
I'm
right
put
here.
That in my back pocket.
Yes, ma'am.
Take it home with me.
Please do. I like. So I'm really excited because I love what you've done with your career. But we're gonna data geek out on mental health and everything that means to you. So
let's do it.
Thank you so much for being here. Would you mind for the listeners just give us a quick bio, like a rundown, who you are, how you do it?
Yeah. So I'm Meriden McGraw. I'm originally from Columbus. Mm-hmm. I am currently the director of the Workplace Mindfulness Team, which we may rebrand to Workplace Mental Fitness, which we were just talking about.
Yep.
At the Osher Center for Integrative Health at the University of Cincinnati.
Yep.
And then I own my own company, Meriden Mental Fitness, where I coach and teach and speak on different mental health topics.
I mean, you are a busy woman.
Yes. And I have 2.5 kids. I'm 20 weeks pregnant with my third.
Yes. Who's really close to your second.
Yes. A little bit of a surprise. Not everything's planned in life.
Nope.
So they'll be 13 months apart. And then we have a 3-year-old Sloan.
Right. Yes. And everything's going to be fine.
It's all going to be
You're going to really flex those mental fitness muscles.
I have been, girl.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, the world is, life is so lifey sometimes, but you know what? What a blessing.
Yes. And I try to control things a lot. And I think the universe is like, hey, you can't control things. Mm-hmm. And then I constantly get situations where it's trying to teach me that.
So. And apparently you really weren't listening because this is a big one that you can't control. I have found that as well. It's like, you didn't hear me. You didn't hear me. I'm going to turn up the dial. Uh-huh. And next thing you know, you're having kids 13 months apart.
Yeah, exactly.
The universe wins again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's amazing. So I love that there is such a concentrated effort within UC around mental health. I've watched you from owning your own business, you know, doing all of the work that you've done. And it sounds like from when we were talking before off camera that you work with, gosh, like you've worked with all types of people. So I've seen you, you know, like the more Instagrammy type of moments where you're like leading corporate types of seminars. And then it sounds like you've worked with sports teams. Like, tell me how, like sort of what are the types of people that you serve?
Yeah. So it's a wide breadth. I got into this about, well, I really got into this, and I won't go too in depth into this
story. I love depth.
Okay.
And tangents. Giddy up.
So I really got into this. I was 22. I graduated from Miami and Oxford.
What?
Back to Columbus.
Love and honor.
Yes. And I was about to start a PhD program in clinical psych. That was my goal. And I was working in the psychiatric unit at the time at Ohio State.
Wow.
And was training for the Peloton, which is a 100-mile bike ride for cancer research. Mm-hmm. Got hit by a car on my bike, was in a wheelchair.
I remember the story.
Yes. Yeah. And so prior,
like, also, you're just like, got hit by a car in a wheelchair. Like, what?
Here are the facts.
Yeah. I'm like, you seem to have
detached all emotion from
really
that story.
You really have. Yeah. I have not. I am highly emotional right now.
It was hard. It was hard.
Yeah.
And I realized I had all of these really big emotions. And I realized that prior to that, the only way that I'd been taught to cope with those was to move. And that's a wonderful coping mechanism.
Ooh,
when and if we can.
Uh-huh.
Which, if I'm sitting in a boardroom leading a meeting, I can't just get up and run in the middle of the meeting if I have a big emotion. I can't just get up and shake my body, right? That's not, we can't always move. And so there has to be other ways. So I started to research and I got a CD-ROM because we use CD-ROMs back
then. I love a CD-ROM.
Yes.
Yeah.
My like cute nanny the other day was like, what do you do? How did you used to play those? And I was like, I am offended. I need some space.
I need some space and some time, sweet adorable thing.
I was like, I need to regroup.
Right. Oh my God. That's
with
amazing.
With a CD-ROM player. Okay, Maddie.
Right.
Yeah.
Duh. Google it.
So I got the CD-ROM, I got hooked on mindfulness, and then I basically spent my 20s, I changed my trajectory of education. So I didn't go into clinical psych. I decided, wow, if I'm experiencing this, this is a universal experience. None of us have been taught how to cope with our emotions in that generation.
Yes, completely.
And I'm like, wait, also there's this whole field of positive psychology where we're teaching people how to thrive.
Yeah.
And it's not just about the absence of disease. It's like, how much can you love your life and flourish and be alive as a human. And so I got a double master's in positive psych and public health.
Amazing.
And then spent my 20s doing all these mind body trainings. So mindfulness based stress reduction training through UC San Diego and pranayama, which is breath and yoga.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was for me.
Yeah.
Right. At a selfish level.
Yeah. I think it's, I've seen so many women, myself included, build businesses that serve your needs.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
Community, connection, service, laughter, sisterhood.
And you're your client, right?
Mm-hmm, totally.
Which is what I've grown into. I'm like, oh, so if this is my human experience, I bet others have this human experience.
Yeah.
And in the mind, body, mental fitness space, a lot of our experiences are not unique. Mm. The story is different.
Yep.
My story is different than yours, but the emotions are the same. The way we might deal with those emotions or cope with those emotions are actually pretty universal.
Wow.
So once you get beneath the story, which is what mindfulness actually invites us to do, is a lot in our mindfulness-based stress reduction courses, someone will come and say, and this happened and this happened. And we say, yes. And how did you feel?
Yeah.
And they'll say, but no, let me go back to the story. And he said this to me. Yep. And how did you feel?
Yeah.
And how did you feel? Where'd you feel that physically?
Uh-huh.
And so we're really getting to the experience and not the story.
And I think it's like, again, I've seen some of the most impactful businesses, and clearly you've made a whole career out of, you went through an experience, and I know we have detached from it and can skip through the facts. I am not detached.
Yes.
I'm still,
okay.
I am back in Columbus. But the fact that you were able to overcome such challenge, I've often found, and I'm assuming with you, has motivated you to then turn around and help people.
Yes. So then all through my 20s, I did all these trainings. And then I moved down to Cincinnati 10 years ago now, a decade ago, which is amazing to
me,
and started working at a health foundation. I was managing our mental well-being portfolio. So I got to fund and manage projects with nonprofits that we partnered on to do mental well-being work in the community.
And 10 years ago, how open and receptive were people to this? Was this like a woo-woo?
Oh my gosh. Everyone thought I was crazy in Cincinnati 10 years ago. Legit crazy. They were like, yeah, okay, we're going to lead a mindful minute at our board meeting. Like, cool. Wacko.
You're like, everyone take off their shoes.
Yes. Yes. Which I don't make you do, by the way, if you don't want to. But the data is so strong. Mm-hmm. And so I kept fighting this uphill battle. And then there was a CEO change. Right before that happened, I got linked up with Marvin Lewis, who was the coach of the Bengals at the time. And it's funny, this story.
That's another casual statement that's like not that casual, but okay.
Well, the story is funny because I was raised in the Browns football. I'm from Columbus.
Oh,
My family's from Cleveland. I'm actually not, sorry, Marvin. and Hugh Jackson, but I worked for both. I'm not like a huge NFL fan. Like I love the Bengals, but I don't like follow.
Yeah.
And so I went to give this presentation to these coaches mm-hmm. and someone came up to me after and was like, we loved it. I thought it was all high school coaches. We loved your presentation. We'd love for you to work with our players on peak performance. And I was like, awesome. Like what high school? I'm new here. I just moved here. And he was like, no, I'm Marvin Lewis.
Like, and you're like, yes.
I was like, in what high school? Yeah. You can't make the coach right. of the Bengals.
You're like, my bad.
Yeah. I was like, oops.
Oh my God.
That is and awesome. I think he actually liked that. Like, I think he thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. I just need to stop for a second. Laugh
it was pretty bad.
I feel like I might've done the same thing though. I get it.
There's probably a lot of people judging me right now, but
you know what? They don't count then.
Yeah.
We're not judging people. Stop it. Yeah. If you are.
Oh. One of the core competencies of mindfulness is non-judgment.
I'm winning in mindfulness.
Yes, you are. Yay! You are.
I would like a gold sticker on my mindfulness chart, please.
Yeah. Many people like that. Yes, like that. Like, did I do it right? And mm-hmm. I'm like, that's actually not the point.
It's amazing. Yeah. I love to joke with my friends. I'm like, if I made my therapist hysterically laugh, I want a gold star.
You're like, am I my therapist's favorite? Yeah. Am I winning?
Did I win therapy today? Because yeah, I feel like I did. Not only did I learn something, but you laughed a couple of times.
Because I made this enjoyable for you.
Because trauma humor is my favorite.
That's amazing.
Okay. So Marvin Lewis is your high school coach.
Started working for his high school that I coached at for 3 seasons. And through that experience, and then Hugh Jackson was an assistant coach for Marvin.
Okay.
And then he went up to coach the Browns for a season. So we would go up every Monday and I worked with his team for a season.
Wow.
And through that experience, I'd been coaching before that in this space.
Yep.
But that experience really helped me, one, to have the confidence to say, like, I can do this on my own.
Hell yeah, you can.
And two, I know how to distill these things now down to very small sound bites. And those guys really helped me see how to make this applicable for anyone in any situation. And it was fun because I would ask them like, okay, what's the most stressful point of your day?
Yeah.
When do you get angry? When do you feel this? And then we made a playbook for them.
Amazing.
Of mind body techniques to use in different situations and scenarios.
Amazing. Just while they're performing as an athlete or just day to day as a human?
Both. So when we had a recording like after games, before games, on the bus, in the training room, when you're doing rest and restoration, at home when you get angry.
Yeah.
And some of the most powerful stories, I won't name names, were players coming in and saying, you know, I tried that breath technique you taught me and normally I scream at my daughter.
Sure.
And I didn't.
Aww.
And so those were more powerful stories than cool. I was able to compose myself after missing a pass or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Those stories of actual real life. So on the field, off the field, that's transferable.
Okay. So when you were saying before that experiences, although like the facts or the details behind the experience are different, sort of how we experience things maybe is pretty similar. And then the techniques, does that translate like me as a mom?
Yeah.
I'm a mom lead. I play mom tennis.
Yeah.
But you know, like I'm clearly not a professional athlete. Does that do the same types of playbooks or sort of the foundational principles in a Bengals player playbook look similar, but to my playbook?
100%. And I tell everyone I work with, we should treat ourselves like an athlete.
Yeah.
Because no matter.
That's what I'm taking away from this is that I'm a professional athlete.
100%. You are basically Joe Burrow.
Yep. Yep.
Joe, if you're listening, you have competition.
I know. Hi, I'm Betsy. Watch out.
No, we should treat ourselves like athletes, meaning that it's important to take care of ourselves in the same way. And every single person wants to be the best version of themselves at whatever it is they're doing.
Yeah.
And so I can't show up and be a good mom. I can't show up and be the best version of myself at work.
Yep.
If I'm not taking care of myself and if I'm not in the present moment.
Yeah.
So if my body is here with you, but my mind is somewhere else, I'm not actually here with you.
Totally.
And a lot of the work that I do is training people how to bring their mind into the present and then not judge it. And then be okay with what's happening. If they're not okay, at least be able to sit with it.
Ooh.
So telling
in the present moment. Mm-hmm. So like if you are a CEO and you're sitting there giving a presentation and all of a sudden panic starts to come in because you're like, I'm so nervous. You have to accept the panic and sit with it.
Yeah. And we stay with it because if we say, oh, I don't want to have panic. I don't want to have panic. It's the same thing as pink elephant, right? Yeah. I don't want to think about the pink elephant. What do we think about the pink elephant?
Yeah. Yeah.
And totally. It's the same thing with anxiety and panic in that situation. Like, I don't want this to be happening. I don't want this to be happening. It happens more.
Yeah.
So we say like, oh yeah, I feel anxious and I'm still going to give this presentation.
Yeah. Oh, I love
that.
Yeah.
Another thing with anxiety and presentations tangent is that you can trick your mind into thinking it's excitement because physiologically excitement and anxiety are very close.
Yes.
And so you can say, ooh, what are those feelings? And we assign a name to the sensations in the body really quick. We say, I know what it is. It's anxiety. But instead you can get curious and say, what are those feelings? What are those sensations? Oh, maybe I'm excited.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And people think that's kind of hoaxy, but it actually does work.
I totally get that. It just made me more excited. I don't know. I can, but like in my body, I do feel those the two things is so similar.
Yes.
Literally, yes. It's just like, I feel like everything just lights right up. And yeah. I'm like, I totally get that. And that like you can, I'm obsessed with the Taylor Swift documentary that's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And what I loved, I think it was particularly about a part where she was really struggling with perception of her weight and her body yeah. image and things like that. And then she had finally had enough and she was about to step out of a car to like, you know, go obviously get a million pictures taken by the paparazzi. And she was getting all in her head about it. And her training, she was like, I'm going to choose again. I'm going to choose a different thought. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, to be like this notion, I guess that's a little different than being curious, but
it's actually saying that it's part of it. So we watch our thoughts and we see our thoughts and a lot of us aren't even aware of our thoughts. So if we're not used to practicing mindfulness, we have this programmed thought track in our brain. Often that's pre-programmed by the age of 7.
Wow.
And so we have a thought track going, we're not aware of it and we believe it. Yeah. And so what mindfulness invites us to do is use curiosity like Taylor was doing to say, what are my thoughts?
Yeah.
What thoughts popping in? You might even ask, where did that thought come from?
Yeah.
Right. And then saying, oh, I don't want to attach my energy to that thought. I'm going to redirect my attention over here, which is what Taylor's saying. I'm going to choose again.
Yeah. Choose again. Yeah.
And it's not always easy. Like none of this work is easy. It's simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah.
But repetition changes the brain. So the more that you do it, the easier it becomes or the more natural it becomes.
I'm obsessed with this because it's like, also like if you have like 4 questions to choose from in that moment of like, I'm about to open the car door and get a million pictures taken by paparazzi or I'm Betsy Leonidas and I'm about to throw a touchdown pass.
Right. Obviously, which is your normal Sunday.
Right. Yes. That is my average Sunday. Yes. It's like, if I'm feeling moments of panic, I could, you know, like you run through those questions quickly, but you have the one that sticks and you're like, okay, that's my question right now in this moment where I have to make, I'm a CEO and I'm standing giving a presentation, like something's going to click for you in those like moments of small discipline of like, slow up, ask the question.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Amazing. Okay. So that's so interesting. So,
I started working with them and then left the Health Foundation. And at the same time I had met Dr. Cotton, who's the head of the Integrative Center at Osher.
Okay.
Or at UC.
And what does the Integrative Center necessarily encompass, mean, et cetera?
Great question. So the Osher Center, they just got endowed as an Osher Center. There's only 11 in the world, 10 in the nation.
That are Osher Centers?
That are Osher Centers.
Okay.
And they're all part of this collaborative network. Ooh. And the goal of the Osher Center at UC specifically is to increase equity and access to integrative practices.
Oh, awesome.
So often they're not accessible from a price perspective for many people that need them.
Which sucks.
Right. Yeah. And so the Osher Center has clinicians all over in cancer, in diabetes, all over the medical center. And then they offer things like group therapy, acupuncture, massage in the community and to patients. So
Amazing
resource that we not a lot of people know about. So
when you say community, is that like to include caretakers of cancer patients? Is that what you meant?
Yep. Okay. And like we do community classes. So for example, like I hosted a 5-week mindfulness class for the community through the Osher Center and anyone could sign up for it.
Oh, yes. So amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what integrative medicine.
Yes. Integrative health.
Integrative health. I'm sorry. Yep.
And integrative medicine, like the clinicians, what they do, like if they're an integrative oncologist would think about, okay, yes, in addition to your treatment that you're receiving, let's think about your diet. Let's think about what you're putting into your body, how you're moving your body.
Yeah.
So it's all the other aspects that we think in our society is an alternative, but really are just good health tenants.
Yeah, totally.
And how can we take care of ourselves better to decrease disease.
Right. From a 360 perspective.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. Okay. So you started working there. You met the
Dr. Cotton, Sean, and we started thinking about, and I was telling her, I'm like, I'm going to go into workplace mindfulness. Like I've been doing this with the Bengals and the Browns. I've been doing it with individual clients and I want to make the biggest impact. We have a stress epidemic in our country.
Truly.
It's only grown since we were talking 7 years ago when we had this conversation at Unwind over a glass of wine.
Yeah, we did.
And so we said, Sean and I were like, let's partner together and how can we reach the greatest number of people? We can reach leaders in the workplace. And so we really believe by shifting people's mental health in the workplace that we can have a ripple effect in Cincinnati and beyond. We created a workplace mindfulness program. And then now we've adapted it to pretty much every setting you can think about. So we've adapted it to schools. We've adapted it to work with women. We've adapted it to work with different financial groups, lawyers, like all across the board. And back to your point about how it's really the experience, the techniques are the same.
Yeah.
It's just different motivators for people. Yeah. So think about mental fitness, like physical fitness, like a push-up's a push-up, right? And if I'm convincing someone, or cardio is cardio, but it's important for everyone to move their bodies and
strengthen their muscles,
strengthen their heart, their muscles, right? Yeah. But I'm going to motivate a lawyer different than I am going to motivate a football player, right? Or a mom has different motivators than someone else. So it's the same thing here. It's thinking about, okay, this mind body practice is the same, but why is it important to you? And how can I tailor it to your life?
I love that. And I'm sure that exactly, like, that intrinsically motivates them.
Because
all of a sudden it truly is like, it's the playbook specifically for them. Okay. Going back to your point about we're in a stress epidemic, what is driving this?
A lot of different things. But some of the stats, which are staggering, if you want data.
Yes, I do.
So 75 to 90% of all underlying primary care visits are due to the cause of stress.
Oh my gosh.
75 to 90%.
That's insane.
So that's, I'm going to my primary care and I have migraines, but the underlying cause is stress.
Yep.
And in the workplace, it impacts us on a financial and personal level. So $300 billion are lost each year due to stress on the job. So that's absenteeism, presenteeism, my butt's in the seat, but I'm not actually focused, and healthcare costs. So $300 billion, 550 million workdays are lost each year due to stress on the job. So I'm calling in sick, but I'm actually stressed.
Stressed. Wow.
And then 53% of women want to leave their job right now in corporate America in the next 2 years and are actively looking. And the number one reason is burnout. Ugh. And it's getting worse for our youth.
Yes.
So
do you think that is, I'm sure it is, again, a multifaceted reason, but I think about these parents that are at work that are so stressed, and that's got to trickle down into the family systems. And then I know that the youth just have, like, I mean, I'm seeing this, I have an almost 13-year-old, and it's like the things that his environment is, I really try, and as a parent, remember what it was like to be a teen, and to be very empathetic as a parent, but it's just so different.
And so there's this concept of emotion contagion. Have you heard of this? Mm-mm. Our emotions are contagious. And they're so contagious that, and I was telling my husband this the other night, we went into the New Rubies downtown. It's not new anymore, but this is like an
we'll still call it New Rubies, old story.
It was new at the time.
Okay.
And we were sitting at the bar and we were looking across the bar and there was a couple fighting. And I was like, do you know that even just being in the same room with them, we don't have to know them, that they're impacting our emotions right now.
Wow.
And first of all, he was like, how do you know that? And I was like, this is my job.
Right.
Ryan.
Actually.
I'm like, okay, bro.
In case you remember who you married, this is my job.
Yeah. I was like, they just do this 9 to 5, but okay. but it's fascinating. Our emotions are contagious, and they're most contagious to, or by, like, we're most influenced by people who are most important to us. So your boss, your spouse, your parent. And what's interesting is emotion contagious is a subconscious process. So I don't actually know, or unconscious process, excuse me. I don't actually know on a conscious level that I'm picking up on your emotions.
Wow.
Unless I set the intention to be aware of that.
Wow.
So if I come home from school and I'm 13 and my mom and dad are just stressed and arguing and bickering and zero judgment, because I've been there.
Sure.
But those emotions impact everyone in the house. And we know this. We've experienced this.
Right.
But the work is to actually, one, as an adult, name your emotions throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So this is called affect labeling.
Okay. Love this.
And affect labeling is a fancy psychological term for naming your emotions. And just by doing that, it decreases the power they have over us, just by naming them.
So if your kid, so if your kids come home and you're like, you know what, I'm doing my best, but I'm a little stressed out right now. I'm just running at about 80% awesome mom level. Like, can you love me anyway? I'm going to do my best.
Yes. And rewind from that. So let's say all day long you're working.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you feel, ugh, I'm clenching my jaw.
Yeah.
How do I feel? I feel really angry. Okay. Yeah. I feel angry. Hand on my heart, deep breath, I'm naming it.
Yeah.
That releases the power it has over us. And what we ignore, we store. What we see, we can shift and release. So if we're ignoring or suppressing those emotions, not naming them all day long, they store up and they come home and then we snap at someone.
Yeah.
Or we're not even knowingly spreading them. So naming them all day, then come home, your teen walks in the room and name it.
Right.
Or if you're a boss at work, name it. It's the same principles. Like, you're a leader of your house.
Yeah.
You're a leader at work. Like, I'm feeling really fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And I want you to know that it's not about you.
Yep. Totally.
And not that's really important, right?
Yeah.
Because when we pick up on others' emotions, we think it's about us, because we think everything's personal, pervasive, and permanent.
Yeah.
And so we say that, we name it, and that automatically stops or decreases the spread of emotion contagion. Or you might say, like, I'm feeling really angry, I need some space.
Yeah.
I'm going to go take care of myself for whatever it
20
is.
20 minutes, yeah.
Do a practice to release the anger. Mm-hmm. And then come back to the situation.
I love that. And then it gives your kids such permission to be like, you know what? I'm actually off today. This is how I feel when you do this. Like, we should be able to talk about that.
100%. Yes. Wow. And then on the flip side of that, it's really important to acknowledge that we can pick up others' emotions. Mm-hmm. So conscious is that in the intention, like when you start to notice, ooh, this person is angry. Reminding yourself, those are not my emotions.
Yeah.
Even with your kids, like those are not my emotions. That right. Like my 3-year-old Sloan, like that's Sloan's anger.
Yes.
That's Sloan's temper tantrum. I'm going to remain calm and centered in my emotions.
Yes.
And not pick up on those.
Okay. So for women who are empath, asking for a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, which is me. So I get it. Okay. Yes.
Yes. It's like, you know, and then I've got 4 little humans in this house that are not so little. And then, you know, like, we just, things happen in the world. Mm-hmm. Like my daughter's best friend is going through something major right now. And she's been spending a lot of time at our house, which I absolutely love. I adore her. Like she is mine. Yeah. And like, but you just feel for these kids on such a deep level. Or like, how do you shield, or like, is that even the right word? Basically, how do you detach from other people's emotions when you're so empathetic? Cause I think there are a lot of us out there.
Yeah. So a practice that I love is called RAIN. It's adapted from Tara Brach. And so it's recognize, allow, investigate, nurture.
Okay.
And I do this a lot.
Okay.
And so you're not ignoring the emotions.
Yeah.
And we're not saying I'm not going to feel because that's false.
It's like impossible.
Yeah. It's impossible.
Right. Yeah.
And that's why like the leave your emotions at the door doesn't work either. And so we have to talk about emotional culture at work, which is a whole different thing.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to circle back to the workplace thing, but we're back on RAIN because I'm into RAIN. This.
So like we want to first recognize, and this is the mindfulness piece. We ignore all the time. So you may be, you know, something happens on the news and you see it and you go, oh, that's horrible. And instead of acknowledging the emotions that come up, you just turn the news off and you try and avoid.
Yeah.
Avoid or suppress or run from what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. Instead, that's really hard. What I'm seeing is hard.
Yeah.
I'm recognizing it.
Yeah.
And then we allow. So I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling whatever it is. And if you're saying, I don't even know adjectives to describe emotions past good, bad, sad, which good and bad aren't emotions, but that's what we say.
Yeah.
Good, bad, busy, sad.
Yeah.
Then we look online and we find emotion, adjective word, which I actually have a little chart we print off for people.
I love
because we're not used to identifying emotions. So
that's how not used to we are about feeling our feelings, that we have to like Google it and print off charts.
100%.
I fully identify. Yeah.
And when I go into like high functioning rooms with women that are successful, good, bad, busy are the words that I get when I ask how you are. And I'm like, that's not an emotion.
Right.
It's not a physical sensation either.
Yeah.
So we've got to get in here.
Uh-huh. We got to get back in the body.
Right. And so like you would say, I'm watching the news. I see the thing. I feel sad, right? We name it. That's affect labeling.
Yep.
And then we don't judge it.
Yeah.
Because what we do is I shouldn't feel this sad. It's not happening to me.
Yes.
Right. That's not me. It could be worse. Like I shouldn't feel this, 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 and this.
I do a lot of that.
Or I don't want to feel this. Mm-hmm. And we allow it to be. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
So we say, okay, it's here, you know, because it already is. So by ignoring it or suppressing it or saying you don't want it to be here, it doesn't make it go away.
Yeah.
So recognize, allow, investigate. Then we get curious. Where do I feel it in my body?
Oh yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the end, which is really hard for high functioning women. Mm-hmm. What do I need?
Oof.
What do I need?
And I literally just got nervous.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's a really hard question. And one, you might say, well, what I need is this to stop happening on the news.
Yeah.
No, no. What do
I need
you
to turn
need?
The TV off to ignore this.
Right.
Right.
Which might be a boundary you set. What well, do you need be. That's in your control?
Right. Oh, yeah. Right? I guess that is an actual thing.
Yeah.
Or like maybe you just need 5 minutes to sit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when we ask, what do we need? We say, well, I need this other person to do this, or I need this to stop happening in the world. Mm-hmm. We can't control that.
Yeah.
So what do I need that I can actually meet?
Yes.
And if I can't meet the full need in this moment, can I need it in an abbreviated way? Because you might say, well, I need 12 hours of sleep.
Yeah. Right.
But you can't do that in that moment. So like, oh, can I take 3 minutes?
Right. To just sit and rest.
Sit and close my eyes.
What about if you're in a scenario and you need something from someone else? Is that fall into this? Acronym?
Yeah. And if you need some from someone else, first take care of yourself. So like,
okay,
I need space, or I need a boundary, or I need to ask this person to do this. We can't make them. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, at first, like, well, what I really need is self-assurance, or what I really need is to hear from this person, this, well, I can't make this person say this. So let me say it to myself.
Ooh.
And then you can say, sometimes the need is an action. Like, yeah, I need to set a boundary. Mm-hmm. I need to turn off the TV. And I'm not telling people to ignore the difficult, hard problems in the world because we have to collectively address them.
Yeah.
But we have to also set boundaries around right. what we're consuming and how long we're consuming it so we can stay sane.
Totally. To preserve ourselves. Yeah.
Keep showing up to change the things.
It makes total sense. It really does. And like literally whenever I hear the word need, it's like, what do you need? I literally get a knot in my stomach because I'm like, I'm figuring out what I need. I'm like, I don't know. I never think about it.
Right.
You know, and I don't know, but that is something that I actively work on. I'm getting a lot better at and like all that stuff, but that doesn't mean that my body isn't so physically conditioned to be nervous. Anytime I even hear the word, what do you need? I'm like, ugh.
Right.
I don't know.
You can have needs.
No,
right?
No, literally this is a sidebar, but my therapy, I do therapy on Zoom with my therapist cause it's easier than driving down to her. And, we're working on needs and I literally started sweating and like had to hang up the phone.
Yeah.
And she was like, get your journal out and write about it. And I was like, I can't even say these things out loud. And they were like very basic functioning things. Mm-hmm. And we had to like try again next week. That is how uncomfortable women can be with needs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if that's you, I invite you to start like, what do I need? Like from a very basic level, like water.
Yeah. Right.
Like start with something like so benign and like necessary for your life.
Oh my God. Yes.
Like I need water.
I need water.
I need to use the restroom.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And those needs start with those and then like work the need muscle up.
I have a need muscle that I need to work on. Yeah. Oh my God. I just got so much more comfortable with that. Yeah. See, this is why I like having these kinds of conversations because sometimes you just have to hear it for the fourth time or hear it from a different perspective. And you're like, okay, I can do this or like whatever.
And it's all about growth, right?
Yep, totally. Like, and growth is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's it really okay. Is. It's okay. The outcome is so worth it.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So I got off on a major tangent because I was so curious about stress. And then I think it's just so interesting. Some of the points that I'm connecting, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that like you were saying the biggest impact that you can have through your work is that you've found it through the workplace. One, because there's sort of the greatest deficit from the data that you mentioned in terms of time and dollars, et cetera. But like the trickle effect that it has from boss to employee to family member to, you know, it trickles all the way down. So I'm like, I totally get it. That makes a ton of sense. Okay. So,
and where do people go? They go to work. So how do we reach them? We reach them through the workplace, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So just out of like curiosity, what is the receptivity to this type of work now 10 years later, or like even midpoint when like how receptive were the Bengals players to this and how receptive are workplace people to this?
Yeah. From an athletic perspective, it depends on the player.
Yeah.
But it's become so mainstream in sports. Like if you watch Full Swing, like behind the PGA Tour, the documentary, it's actually good. My husband had me watch it, but it's really good.
That sounds really cool. I'm watching Ted Lasso for the third time.
Ted Lasso has mindfulness infused all through it.
All through it. Yeah.
And in Full Swing, like in the second season, I think it's episode three, like two of the players.
I love that you're like season two, episode three.
Yeah. But it's become really mainstream sports because again, how can you do anything to the best of your ability if your mind is not present?
Yeah.
If you can't see the negative self-talk and shift the negative self-talk.
And I'm sure that with athletes, they're so able to measure the outcome of the value of it because they know that they were at peak performance before a mindfulness coach, teacher. I'm sorry if I'm using the wrong word.
Fine,
expert. Amazing person.
Yeah. Human.
Human. Comes into their life, they know what their baseline is of peak performance. Yeah. And then they start doing this mindfulness work and they see the shift in, you know, sort of their, like you mentioned before, during and after. That's measurable.
Yeah. And I think that's the important point here. And when we go into workplaces, the reception has changed drastically in the last 5 years for a number of reasons. One, COVID happened.
Yeah.
So a lot of people hit their breaking point.
Yeah.
And so companies were like, we need help. So we're willing to step outside of our comfort zone. And then two, we have the data to support this.
Yeah.
Not just nationally, but our team at UC. So we have an 8-week course that is our foundational course in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And we have pre-post data from that course with thousands of people, but we took a subset of 418 people at 10 different companies.
Okay.
And we saw statistically significant decreases in stress, decreases in burnout, increase in resiliency, and increase in empathy. Wow. So we move the needle on all of those things.
Wow.
And we've been able to do that with every single group that we've implemented this course with.
And like, just to pause for a second, can you imagine as an employee for someone who had been in corporate for 15 years to go in and feel less stressed, to have a boss that is more empathetic and to have just like a more highly productive and like a sort of like pleasant and peaceful way. Like that just sounds lovely.
Which decreases your blood pressure, which decreases healthcare costs. So it's all connected for companies.
Yes.
And we're more efficient and focused when we practice mindfulness, because we're multitasking all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And which we can't do. And so this helps us focus on one thing and retrain the brain to be in the moment. Yeah. So we have that data. And then nationally, there's been so much data done in the last like 20 to 30 years in this space.
Yeah.
And we know that mindfulness can change up to 8 parts of the brain.
Wow. So, how many parts of the brain are there? I was like, frontal lobe.
There's little parts within that.
Bacal lobe.
I'm do you have a song about it? It sounds like you're going to sing a song.
I could sing a song for you about
it. Song, I know. Alabama.
Alaska. Arizona. Yeah, literally. Oh my God. One of my favorite memes right now is like someone is pretending to be their memory and she just like wants to remember one thing from a minute ago. They're like, did you need the state instead of alphabetical order? Did you need your passcode? Uh-huh. Your mom's phone number? Did you need?
Do you need the words to this rap song from 1997?
Literally, I can take it from the top right now.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Ready. Oh my God. That's amazing. I'm sorry to get him soft.
No, it's okay. I love it.
So
8 parts of the brain.
8 parts of the brain.
Yes. So we fMRI studies. So we look at the brain, we scan it.
Oh, wow.
With people who are consistent mindfulness practitioners. And the three that I think are most important and interesting in our society, prefrontal cortex. So that's executive functioning, ration, reason.
Yeah. That which part, I think a lot of people, it's fuzzy.
Minus.
Yeah.
Well, if you have kids, bad news, you're in your amygdala more. Like if you actually physically bear them, you're in your amygdala actually grows and never returns back to its original size.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah. And your amygdala is fight or flight.
But that is why we all, I'm like, did I just jog through the house?
Yes.
I'm like, yes. To get from one room to the next.
Oh my gosh. We're buying a new house. Now we're on the third floor the other day and there was no glass in this window and Sloan opened it and I was like, oh my God. And
oh my
literally reacted. As if a lion was chasing her.
Yes. Yes.
Which is what we need fight or flight for.
Of course.
Not a bad thing.
Right.
We're in it all the time.
Yeah. There's just not that many lions around.
Correct. Like a snarky Enoch Mir boss is not a lion.
No, it's just a shit boss.
Right. Right.
Uh-huh.
And like your kid throwing a temper tantrum, not a lion.
Not a lion.
Difficult. I'm not belittling that. It's hard.
Yeah. And life is hard.
Not a lion.
Right. Not a lion. Not an actual lion. So you are okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what we're seeing is we're in this, in our society, we're in a constant state of sympathetic nervous system overdrive. What the heck does that mean? We're in fight or flight all the time.
Yeah.
And so our amygdala is growing. So with consistent mindfulness practice, your amygdala actually decreases in size.
Yeah.
It's a very simplified way of saying, describing brain science if you're a neuroscience scientist listening to me. But
I'll give you grace because I'm a neuroscientist.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah. But I don't want to, I mean, that's what you need to know if you're listening and not a neuroscientist. But
so like if you do remain in a constant state of fight or flight, which basically our societal conditioning is kind of bringing us all to that place. Yep. And also if you've carried children, whoopsie-doo, it got super big.
Yeah.
You can actually reduce the size of it with mindfulness practice. So you cannot, it's not even just like, a rewiring. Like you are giving space to probably other more important parts of your brain. Like it's not so squished
over. Your prefrontal cortex and gets bigger and then your hippocampus, which is short-term memory increases, the growth there. Like,
oh, my hippocampus is so tiny.
Yes, but you can change it. And okay. I think that's what the powerful thing here is, you can change your brain.
Yeah, truly.
And it doesn't matter when you start. We know this happens throughout the entire lifespan.
Yeah.
And that's really powerful.
It's so powerful.
Right? Yeah. We can change our perception of what's happening around us and we can change our brain and how it interacts with the world.
Yeah.
And I think what we're seeing right now is we have, since people are in such sympathetic nervous system overdrive, they're operating out of their amygdala.
Mm-hmm.
And what that looks like is flicking people off in traffic. No judgment. I've done it. But like snapping at someone, screaming at someone.
Yeah.
That's your amygdala.
Yeah.
And that's not the place that's our authentic place that we want to operate out of.
Right. That's not right. That doesn't ever, whenever I like, I was telling you the story before we hopped on that, like, you know, it was one of those days where I was so deeply exhausted. I had heard mom about 1,000 times. Then all of a sudden the smoke alarm, like a battery needed to be changed. The dogs are freaking out because they're afraid of that beeping noise. I'm climbing up on the ladder and poor Adeline is like, hey mom. And I was like, what? I mean, I grew 10 other heads and I looked at her and she looked like she had seen a ghost. The lion was definitely right in front of her. And instantly I was like, oh my God, this is not about you. I am so sorry. I have to change this battery. Please know that I am deeply sorry. This is not about you. I'm just so stressed. Let me change this battery. And then I promise I'll be a real mom and I will come see you. Just give me a minute. But like that is not the authentic me.
No, it's not.
No.
And what I've noticed, people always like, what does your mindfulness practice help you with? Like,
Oh yeah. Great question.
A lot, right?
Yeah,
and
sure.
What I've noticed for me is I'm able to see when I'm going into a state of stress like that much quicker.
Yeah.
So it's a spiral, right? Like the first mom didn't bother you. The second mom didn't bother you.
Right.
57th.
Right.
511th.
Uh-huh.
Your body is activated.
Right.
And everyone just has a threshold.
100%.
Yeah.
And so what I'm able to see from a space, from a distance, is actually my body going into fight or flight, ooh, which is super cool. And I can say, ooh, okay, I need space.
Yeah.
I need 10 seconds. I need to take deep breaths. I need to do something to balance my nervous system to be able to continue to operate in this environment. If possible, can I remove myself, which is not always possible.
Right. If you're sitting in the board meeting and you feel it coming up.
Yeah. But at least you see it. And then what we say to do in board meeting is breath.
Yeah.
Or with your daughter. I can't remove myself, breathing. Yeah. So people get mindfulness and breath confused. Breathing practices are a whole different mind-body modality.
Yes.
And we can do breath to activate the nervous system or downregulate the nervous system.
Okay.
And so in that moment when we want to downregulate, like if we are in a board meeting and I'm going into fight or flight, I feel like, wow, I see my body activating.
Yes.
Inhale 2 or 3, exhale 4 or 6. We just make the exhale twice as long as the inhale. It calms down our nervous system.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you do that one?
I've just learned that one. Yes. And for some reason, the way that and you probably know and I don't, but the moment I open my eyes, I go into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. But I know that now. And so I'll snooze. And for that one snooze, I will do those breaths.
Yes. And you're preparing yourself for your day. And how different do you feel?
100% different. Literally.
Amazing.
Yep. A whole different person.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, okay. That's all good. And literally my whole entire day is different just from breathing.
Yes.
And it's also lovely because I don't even have to open my eyes yet. Mm-hmm. I can get even farther under the covers. It's my permission to snooze. It is just truly
so many good things at once.
Yes. It is one of the highlights of my day where I've gone from it used to be scary to wake up because it just really I could just feel so overwhelmed literally before my eyes open. It's just my chemistry, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is absolutely. And I do find that my emotional regulation is a bajillion, quadrillion times better.
Yes.
Truly. Yeah. Which feels awesome.
Yeah. It feels so good to have that control and power.
Yeah.
And in mindfulness, this is called meta-awareness, which is the ability to see our thoughts, our physical sensations, and our emotions from a distance.
Yeah.
When we can see them, we're not consumed by them.
Yeah.
And that's what you're practicing when you practice emotion regulation. You're saying, oh, there's anxiety.
There's
anger. Mm-hmm. Right?
Totally.
But we're not saying, I'm angry.
We're saying,
there's anger passing through. It's temporary. Okay.
Yep.
What do I do to care for myself while this anger passes through?
And when I take those breaths, I really do feel like I'm accepting it, but clearing it.
Yes.
I'm like, you don't have to hold on to this. Yes. Just let this go.
You don't have to store it in the body, which is what we do so often.
And me too. Yeah. I'm really bad about that. Yeah. And it never happens on purpose, but I can literally tell you in my chest is my sadness. In my stomach is my anger. In my hips is my fear.
Oh, that's beautiful awareness though.
Thank you.
You can see that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been practicing mindfulness for 2.5 years now, but now, and then I can get, if I have the time to sit with it, then I can get curious about what are you nervous about or sad about, or I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
But it's been really helpful and it makes me way more aware. And your distance from where you see your emotions is probably a mile and mine is probably an inch, but
it's not a comparison. No,
truly, but it feels like progress and that feels awesome.
And it's all personal to us because our baseline is different.
Yeah.
Yeah. How we feel emotions is different and what we notice first. So it's a cycle, right? Physical sensations, emotions, thoughts, and then behavior.
Yeah.
Which we don't always have the behavior, but some people notice the physical sensations first. Some people notice the emotions first. Some people notice the mind first. So it's all different for each of us at what point of entry we can stop that stress cycle.
I am obsessed. Okay. So what if you are in a moment where it is warranted to be really stressed?
Yeah.
What do you do? Whether you are so let's say you're in a room of 50 and you're third to give the presentation and you were cool as a cucumber. I'm speaking from personal experience.
Yeah, what if?
I know. If I'm first to present, I'm cool. Yeah. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm done. I didn't have time to think about it. But if I have to sit in the room, then I'm not present because I'm just thinking about how I'm going to perform. Mm-hmm. Or I'm equally as stressed when I'm I have to get 4 kids to 4 different soccer practices and I have no window
for air.
Yes. Thank you. No window for air. What do I do? What do you do? How do we do it?
So first acknowledge and accept.
Mm-hmm.
I feel this in this moment.
Yeah.
Also, we're changing the language around emotions. So we're not saying I am, we're not claiming it as part of who we are.
I love that.
We're saying I feel.
Yeah.
Or even there is.
Yeah.
Right. So acknowledge and then come back to the present. as many times as you need to. What does that mean? So you have four kids to get to four different things.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take the first kid.
Yeah.
One by one. And I'm focusing on this thing. And
yeah.
Breathing and I'm focusing and I'm breathing. And your mind will say, well, but what about this? And what about this? And what about this? I'm coming back. And yeah. You might have to do that 10,000 times.
Yeah. But I get it. What you, yes. It makes total sense.
And go back to the presentation. So in that moment, I would really want you to ground.
Yeah.
So I want you to notice your feet on the ground. I want you to get your attention as far away from your head as you can.
I love that. Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. So get into your feet, notice, breathe.
Yeah.
And then same thing. Oh, I'm thinking about my presentation bubble. Let me come back to something I can anchor my awareness on now. My feet, the person talking, what is happening now?
Yeah.
And you want to get into the present because in the present, that threat is not real.
Yeah.
You're not actually standing up there. You're not actually late for one of these kids' things.
Right. And there's actually not a lion chasing.
Correct. Right. And breath helps there too. The inhale double exhale will help.
Yeah.
Anything you can do to calm the nervous system and get into the present moment.
I love that.
And just accepting, like, I feel stressed.
Yes.
I feel scared. This is hard, right?
One of the things that you just said that also is like a total game changer for me is like to not claim it as yours. Mm-hmm. So like when we think about like you mentioned anger, for example, like anger is something that both you fefeel and I feel. So it's not my anger or your anger. It is like its own little, I'm just picturing it as like a little cartoon. Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's weird. But like, you know, it is a thing that permeates all of us, but it is not us.
Yeah. So Siegelman is a positive psych guy who I love. And it's permanent, personal, and pervasive.
This is my favorite. Okay. Let's do it.
Like I think about this every day. I use this technique.
Okay.
So something happens and we tend to think it's personal.
Yeah.
This only happens to me. I'm the only person. And we don't necessarily even say those words, right? Mm-hmm. But like, I have to get four kids to talk about this. This is so hard for me and blah, blah, blah. Right? It's personal.
Yeah.
It's
no one else is as stressed as I am right now. Yeah, totally.
And it's permanent. That stress is always going to be here. It's never going to get better, right? And it's pervasive. So, this day was so stressful. The whole day was so stressful, right?
Yes.
Was it stressful or was it that 1 hour?
Yeah.
That you experienced stress, right? And so instead we can shift that. And that's what we're talking about, impermanence with emotions, right?
Yeah,
like it's not pervasive. Anger's not always here. Anger's here now. And you're correct. It's a human universal emotion. It's not my anger.
Right.
Anger is visiting.
Yeah.
Anger is here. There's a poem by Rumi called The Guest House. The emotions come and go.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Right? Like anger is here. I serve it tea and then it's on its way.
Oh,
and
I love
something
that.
Else comes and I serve it tea and then it's on its way. And it's not permanent.
Yeah.
And when we start to see that everything in life is temporary, it gives us this freedom.
Totally. And it's also perspective. Like everything is temporary. So if you're in the middle of good, this is also temporary. Yeah. And so just live it, love it, enjoy it.
And enjoy it. I'm working on that still because I'm like, when's the next shoe going to drop and what's going to happen?
Oh, hey, hypervigilance.
Yes, I know.
Hey, girl, hey.
Yeah. I also have a therapist.
Right.
Everyone should.
Everyone should.
Especially if you're in the mental health space.
I can imagine. Right? Especially if you're an empath in the mental health space. Girl. Yeah.
But like, it's really important. And then we talk about this with mindfulness a lot. Like I give these presentations on stress, right? But also this is about how do you savor your life?
Yeah.
Right? Like how do I enjoy those good moments? And when those good moments are happening, how do I sit with it? Like and even those small good moments, like if I'm outside with my toddler or my kids, like the sun's on my face.
Yes.
This is beautiful.
The birds are chirping.
In this moment, we are safe. In this moment, we are experiencing joy, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that's really, really important for us too as humans.
Yeah.
To notice those good times.
And I feel like when I take those moments and so often it's easiest to notice outside. But like, talk about calming your nervous system. Yes. As soon as you feel the joy of the moment, it's all peace.
Yes.
I'm 100%. Like, that's easy.
Yes. And physical touch is a big thing that we overlook. So like just putting your hand on your heart, which for some people can feel super hoaxy.
Yeah.
I get it. There's research to support this calms the nervous system.
Cool.
So like my husband's always like, what are you doing? And I'm like, calming myself.
Just literally holding my heart in my hand. But that's really.
But just like that gentle touch helps bring us back into the moment, helps us see what's around us, helps us ground in the body.
I love that.
And if the heart's not right for you, maybe the low belly, maybe your hands on your pushing down on your thighs.
Yep.
There's some physicals.
Just brings you back into your body.
Yes.
So you had mentioned that there is a difference. I'm going to totally just get this all wrong. So then you can just correct me. But so there was the difference between thoughts and or like mental and physical. You were saying mindfulness versus like mental practice. Yes. Versus breath.
Yes.
So there seems to be sort of like a mental component to it and a physical component to it. Is that what you're trying? Okay.
Kind of. So we were operate out of the College of Medicine at UC, and so we get to go teach to medical students on day one, and we teach them about the mind-body connection. Uh-huh. And we have them do a lemon imagery. We also teach this in our 101, right? Mm-hmm. Have you done it?
Okay, cool. I had a therapist have me do when I had horrible PTSD after Adeline came home from the hospital. Thank you. Yeah. I would literally be in the shower getting ready for work. And the next thing I know, it would be ice cold and I'd be an hour late for work because I was just caught in flashbacks of like her at the hospital. And so when I was in therapy for that, they were like, cut the lemon and then you can like my mouth salivating. Yes, yeah, totally.
So if you haven't done it, you cut a lemon, you imagine it, and then you take a bite of it in your visualization. Mm-hmm. And yeah, use people salivate. They wins. About 80% of people have a physical reaction.
Yes. I'm literally salivating. Yes. It's so sour in my mouth right now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing that exemplifies is our minds and our bodies are connected. Mm-hmm. And so this is the field of mind, body medicine and mind, body science.
Very cool.
And then underneath that field or that umbrella are different modalities.
Okay.
Mindfulness is a modality and field under the mind body umbrella.
Okay.
Breath, acupuncture, massage, anything that helps us foster the mind body connection falls under that umbrella.
Cool.
So mindfulness is not a relaxation technique, which often is a misconception.
Ooh.
Right? So people say, Mary, I tried that mindfulness thing and I did not feel calm.
Right.
Like, I did not feel relaxed. You are selling a bag of tricks.
Right. Like I'll cap.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not the goal or the work. The goal is to simply bring your mind into the present. And you may not like the present.
Yeah.
Right. And then we see the present and we either say, what can I change? Mm-hmm. What can I accept? Mm-hmm. Or how can I take care of myself in this really shit hard time?
Yeah, totally. I mean, truly, like that's something that, and I feel like maybe other people can relate to, is like in a stressful situation, you just kind of go into survival mode and my emotions absolutely go on the back burner. Yeah. And I'm like, how do we get through this?
Yep.
And I will go back to them. But like, if I could, I have noticed recently in this stressful situation we've got going on this week with family and friends, and it's all good. It's all good. It's all going to be fine. But like, I'm trying to connect at least every night to be like, how do you feel?
Beautiful.
Because otherwise it gets stuck literally in different parts of my body. And then I'm at my primary care doctor being like, I think I need a scope.
Yeah.
Like
100%.
Mindfulness isn't necessarily like just about relaxing.
Right.
Because so many of us have tried to meditate and you're like, nope, didn't help. Yeah. So tell me more about really like essentially what is the physical outcome or the value around mindfulness.
Yeah. So mindfulness is the misconception is that we're supposed to feel relaxed after, or that our mind is supposed to be empty.
Yeah. Right. Or that like, right. Literally. That's what they tell you is like, empty your thoughts.
I'm going to my Zen state. No, that's not mindfulness. Transcendental meditation. That's the point of that type of meditation.
Okay. Thank you.
Combo.
That makes everyone can have the permission to just like, it's okay. You're not, you don't have to, it's not.
That's not what we're doing here. Literally what we're doing is noticing when the mind wanders and trying to bring it back.
Yeah.
And not judging what the mind is thinking about or judging what's happening in our body or around us.
And amazing.
And sometimes we don't like the current moment. So that's why people are like, mindfulness is hard. And mindfulness is hard.
Yeah.
And so what's important though about coming into the moment is one, what we see we can change. And we can change or we can accept. And if we can't accept, we can say, shit, how do I take care of myself right now in this really hard time?
Yeah.
And there's this study that was done. They put people in this simulated traffic jam.
Oh, wow.
2,000 people.
Wow.
And they said, you've got to sit here for 4 hours in this traffic jam.
Oh, my God.
I know. But group A, I want you to pretend like you're in Cabo.
Yeah.
So you're not even in the traffic jam. Like you're drinking a margarita. You're in Cabo. Like just ignore the traffic. Group B, I want you to really notice how you feel physically, what emotions come up, what cars you see, just like really be present with the traffic jam, your internal sensations and everything happening around you.
Yeah.
And then they gave them all these tests on like stress and happiness and how happy are you right after and then 24 hours later.
Wow.
And it's counterintuitive. The group that was present in the traffic jam was happier and less stressed right after and 24 hours later.
Wow.
Yes. Because just because I'm sitting in traffic and I'm like, I'm going to ignore the traffic, I'm in Cabo, doesn't mean my jaw's not clenching.
Wow.
Doesn't mean I'm not holding the steering wheel really tight. Doesn't mean that moment still isn't hard.
Yeah. And it's like you're ignoring it.
Yes. And so even though it's hard, we want to be able to bring our mind into the present and stay with. Now, disclaimer, if you have trauma come up, if you have intense, really hard things, practice mindfulness with the support of a mental health professional.
Yeah.
Because it can be difficult to sit for the first time with ourselves, especially when we've been avoiding really hard things for a long time. So it's important to get support if that's you. But if it's just uncomfortableness, boredom, we hate to sit with boredom.
Yes.
A little bit of sadness, a little bit of anxiety, see if you can sit with it. See if you can stay with it.
That's amazing. And I like, again, it's just, and that's what reconnects you back to your body so that you are in the present moment again.
Yeah.
To be like, actually, my jaw is really tight. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
That's everyone's favorite practice. We teach that on week one of our 8-week course, and their homework for the day is just like, notice when you're clenching your jaw.
Ooh.
And so many people are like, oh, I thought I had a mindfulness practice, but I didn't know physically, like I'm clenching all day long.
Uh-huh.
And when we're clenching our jaw, we're clenching our shoulders, we're clenching everything in our body.
And it's like, it's just that increased awareness that like, I can imagine like just even noticing all day when I'm clenching my jaw. I don't know. I'm actually going to do that. I'm going to do that this afternoon and like, just try and take note of it. And I don't think it would be like, oh my God, I'm clenching it. I'd be like, actually, this is your chance to just relax.
Yeah.
Just let it go.
Release.
Right. And oh, there it is again.
Everything else releases.
Yeah. There it is again. Are you okay? Yeah. You're okay. Okay. You can unclench your jaw now. Yeah. Oh my God. That's amazing. Okay. So I know that you have to run soon because otherwise it would keep you for hours and hours and hours.
I could sit here all day.
This is so fun.
To go be a mom and.
Samesies. Yeah. Okay. So the last thing we want to talk about, when I always like to ask women, like, what is your wish for women? Yes. You know, what do we wish that we talked more about? What do you wish that we understood more about? And you had this really cool answer around redefining productivity. And I would love for you to just walk us through that, because when we talked about it off camera, I was like, this is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. I share this in a lot of my presentations. I'm like, I'm on a one woman mission to redefine productivity.
I'll be on your train.
And yeah. I do have people say they will. So maybe we're at like 100 now.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah. Yeah.
101 with Betsy.
Yep.
And we have to redefine productivity. So right now in our society, we think about productivity as the output. And we have to include everything that goes into taking care of ourselves to create that output. So yes. I came to this conclusion because I'm an entrepreneur at heart.
Yes.
I work with Main Street Ventures, and it's a really cool accelerator. Sorry, Abby, if that's wrong, but a really cool company here that supports entrepreneurs. And I got to do an 8-week course with all their entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And studying them, I'm like, oh gosh, like, if you don't take care of yourself as an entrepreneur, your business fails.
Literally.
Right?
Yes.
But that is true for entrepreneurs too. It's true anywhere you work, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't keep showing up.
Yeah.
So if you want to have an output,
yeah,
whatever it is that your output is, touchdowns, proposals, you know, revenue, whatever it is, you've got to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And productivity has to include rest. It has to include disconnection. It has to include socializing, laughter, good food, all of those things are quote unquote productive. And I hear so many women say, oh, I was just so lazy this weekend. I did nothing. And it's like, no girl, you rested, which is productive because now you're going to show up at whatever you're doing on Monday as a much better version of yourself.
It's putting fuel in the tank.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
And that language that we use matters.
Yes.
And we've been programmed with language that's very unhealthy. Many of us in our generation.
Yes.
So it's just noticing when you use that, like, oh, I'm so lazy, I'm worthless, like that kind of talk.
Absolutely.
And just saying, no, actually I'm resting, which is productive and helping me be a better version of whatever it is that I'm being.
I also feel like it does a great job of making you be prioritized on what really is value in terms of your output. Because if you take the time for the input, which is part of the whole productivity train, then something's got to give, but in the best way possible. I think women often, and I probably men too, but I'm not a man, so I haven't thought about it as a man, of like, we are conditioned that the value we're worthy, or like essentially the value of us is how much we are able to produce. It's like a quantity kind of thing.
Yes.
It's like I feel good about myself when I make a to-do list 100 miles long and I scratched everything off. It's like, first of all, I've never done that.
Dopamine hit.
Right. But, yeah, totally.
And also, like, the thing is that redefine how we define our days. So it's not about what you got done. It's about how you felt.
Yes.
So like, we even say like, Betsy, how was your day? It was so good. I got so much done.
Yes. Right? Literally. Yes.
No, but like, how did you feel while you got it done? Were you frazzled and sweating and your heart was like having heart palpitations? Like, how did you feel? What brought you joy today? Who did you help today? Where did you experience gratitude? Where did the sun shine on your face? Like, we have to shift what we're doing because people are burning out left and right.
Yes.
And it's simply not healthy for us as humans. We're not human doings. We're human beings.
Yes.
And so shifting how we define our lives is so critical.
I am obsessed with that. And that is like for this business course that I'm teaching for women, because I see so many entrepreneurs, myself included, completely burn out. Yeah. And I just taught the first week this week, and the whole first section is around sort of like, what is the vision of your life and what goals support that vision of your life? Because if you don't fall in love with how you feel every day doing what you do, then you're never going to keep going.
100%.
And so like there are days where I wake up in the morning, even when I kind of reset my nervous system through breathing, but then I go to actually look what's on the plate and I'm like, man, this is really intimidating.
Yeah.
I literally will sit there with my journal and be like, how do I want to feel when I do each task?
Yeah.
And that's on me to make sure that, okay, if I'm, you know, I have to drive to the gym to lift with my trainer, it's something I really want to do, but I also have 10 other things to do today. I'm like, that time is for me.
Yeah.
I will absolutely make sure that I enjoy myself while I'm there.
Yeah. Cause if you're not, if you're thinking about work the whole time, then you're not actually there.
You're not, it's so right. You're not there. You're not where your feet are. Yeah.
Yes.
But I love that, that like productivity is not, it's not about quantity. And in order to be as productive as you want to be, you have to put fuel in the tank.
You have to. And it's so cliche, like put your mask on first, but like that shit is real.
It's so real.
Like we cannot, and I always say if we can't sit with ourselves, we can't sit with anyone else. And if we can't take care of ourselves, we can't take care of anyone else. And becoming a mom 3 years ago, I knew that like from a client perspective and work perspective, but becoming a mom hit that home for me. Cause I'm like, wow, if I did not care for my emotions, I can't help this little being that's emotional.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's just so critical whether you have kids or not.
Yes.
To take care of yourself.
And I have never heard if you can't sit with yourself, you can't sit with others, but holy moly, that's good.
Yeah. One quick more study and then we'll wrap up.
But anytime you want to tell me more studies, I'll stay here all day, but I really want to make sure you get to where you need to
be. This is one of my favorites, but there is a study done with 100 men and 100 women and they put them in a room by themselves. 15 minutes, you can sit by yourself, or you can choose to shock yourself. So physically inflict harm upon yourself, not knowing how painful it's going to be.
Oh my God.
And 25% of women and 67% of men chose to shock themselves.
What?
Rather than just sit by themselves in silence for 15 minutes.
Were they like quote unquote bored or
uncomfortable? They didn't want to sit with themselves, which can be hard again.
Yeah.
We know.
Yeah.
But
for sure.
But we have to, like, if I'm a leader, how can I sit with someone coming to me with their problems if I can't sit with mine, right? If I'm a parent, how can I sit with my kids if I can't sit with myself or a spouse or a friend or whatever it is? So we have to sit with us first to be able to hold space for anyone else.
Oh my. I'm going to think about that also all day long. I mean, and like, I do feel like I can sit with myself, but I definitely remember moments where I feel like I can't, you know? But that is profound, truly. Like, and I love thinking about that in such a multifaceted way as a mom, as, you know, a business coach, as, you know, all the different hats that we all wear all day long. Like, can you handle yourself in that similar capacity? If so, like, can you serve and support others?
100%. Yes.
Wow. Oh my God. This has been so fascinating.
Yeah. I loved hanging out with you.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can you come back and I'll hold your newborn baby and we can talk some more?
Please.
Yes, oh my God. I would love that. I would love to rent your baby.
Yes. Sign up. Done.
Yes. Done. I go first on the list.
Perfect.
We'll come right back to this couch. Yes. I will pour you some wine.
Perfect.
And I will hold your baby and we'll just continue to talk.
Sounds like my dream.
This has truly been fascinating. And I know that you work full time, that you are caring for small children while carrying an actual child. And like you are doing all sorts of stuff within your family and moving and all the things. So I am so deeply grateful for you carving the time to come be here. I feel myself physically smiling. I have enjoyed this so much.
I love this too. Thank you for having me.
And this is just like, this is the kind of stuff that like I can't wait for women to hear. And we all need to hear it from different perspectives. And you just kind of have to be in the right mindset. And so I know that this will have such a huge impact. So thank you so much for your time. I'm so impressed with what you've done with your career, both in terms of breadth and impact, and sort of you have absolutely written your own story and carved your own path. Mm-hmm. And so for, I think even just hearing that alone gives women the permission and the bravery to go do that for themselves. And let alone, we all have now a million more reasons and facts and to sit with ourselves and to work on our mindfulness and then some really great ways for how to do it. So girl, you crush this. It's like you do this a lot or something.
I appreciate you. Oh. Thank you so much.
All right, you guys, absolutely feel free to share. I think this can help so many women, and that's all we're here to do, is to kind of help and love and support each other as women. So let's keep doing it. And thank you again so much for your time. And you guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Well, that's the end of this episode, but promise me you won't stop here with whatever it is you're feeling or dreaming about. I hope you leave today feeling empowered to live life just as you see fit. If this podcast was helpful to you, it would mean the world to me if you could leave a review on whatever platform you're listening on. I genuinely just want to help women live the life they dream about. So if this type of content tracks with you, subscribe to this podcast or visit our website, writeyourownstory.co, to download digital courses or to grab a journal and a mug to just dream in and dream with. It's your life, lady. Do you. And just remember, I'm rooting for you, and you've totally got this.